The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And just savoring for a minute your practice, what you're aware of. And I'm going to start by talking about what is mindfulness. And Munindraji was a teacher. He was a lay practitioner who taught, like Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg, several of the Western key insight meditation teachers. And he said that meditation is sitting, and he knows that he is sitting. She is sitting. Just that simple. Can be just that simple. I'll also give you a more complicated description, but just right now, do you know you're sitting? Can you know you're sitting? And then can you know it by feeling it, sensing it in your body? So very simple, and then, you know, a much more complex description. Mindfulness is a quality of awareness in which our perception of the present moment is not distorted. And there's a long list, but essentially what I think about is when greed, hatred, and delusion are present, the only thing to do is know that they're present. You know, they color things so much, they distort things so much. And so sometimes if we're practicing mindfulness of something and there's a lot of greed, don't pay attention. Maybe the greed is for my water bottle, whatever, right? And if I look at my water bottle, all I'm going to do, I'm looking through the lens of greed, right? So it's like I won't see the water bottle for what it is. I will see it with wanting. I will see it with this wanting energy. We talked about the hindrance of greed or desire a couple weeks ago. Like putting dye in water, it changes what you see. If I hated my water bottle and I looked at it through hatred, you know, I will see something different. It will color and impact what I see. If I have delusion, I might think this is the water of life. If I drink this, I will live forever, right? So when we have greed, hatred, and delusion, it will not allow the mind to see things clearly, which is the goal of our practice. So don't try and look at other things. Just notice greed, hatred, and delusion. Learn what they are. What are they doing? How are they operating? Or shift your awareness to something extremely neutral and distract and disengage, right? If you need to do that. So paying attention on purpose in the present moment with some clarity, right? With some clarity about what is sitting, what do my feet feel like, right? And paying attention in a way that there's this discernment, this wisdom, and there's also a kindness, there's also an allowing, or there's a way of being with that isn't, for or against. That is like, oh, you're all welcome kind of thing. And so here's a sentence. Mindfulness spearheads the path of understanding our lives. Mindfulness spearheads, right? Spearheads, so leads, right? Helps us find this path of understanding our lives by helping us to notice. Helping us notice what causes suffering and what brings freedom. this is so big to start to learn and notice what is, this goes back to the words skillful and unskillful. Somebody used those words in relationships to thoughts. So mindfulness helps us to see and notice, you know, what is bringing us toward or away from suffering, toward or away from freedom. And it is the root of living our lives more fully and more truly. So this capacity of mindfulness is very, very central to our practice. And what is our practice? So that's the other question. So when I ask that, there's two mics, one beside you, Mike, one right there, Marie, right there. When I say practice, what does that mean to you? Or when you think about practice in this context, what does that mean to you? Anybody willing to say? Just answer for yourself if you don't want to say it out loud, but just let yourself connect with what do you think about? When, 'cause to me, this is so important, this idea of practice. The Buddha really, he did a lot of teaching, but he taught that we should come and see for ourselves. We should apply what he taught. We should see through our own experience, our direct experience, what he was talking about. Sort of not just knowing something, but learning it, embodying it, letting it move through us, feel, you know, like sort of really coming to know things. So for me, practice is about even something as simple as practicing seeing clearly. Practicing knowing what I'm experiencing in the present moment. It's so easy to get caught up in thinking and delusion. It's so easy to get caught up in how I want to feel, which is a form of desire, right? So just it's practice. These things are natural. They're going to happen. And so just having a real understanding, a real commitment to over and over and over again practice. Doesn't mean you have to be perfect. It doesn't mean, you know, you have to know exactly what you're doing. It means you're engaging in the teachings and you're learning, you're observing, you're watching, you're witnessing. You're putting effort and intention. Richard, please.
So, practicing to me represents my life, that I've dedicated my life to practice. And what I'm pointing to and attempting to live is a life that recognizes things the way they are, the way things are, the truth of the way things are. And to the degree that I can open to that and rest in that experience, whatever's arising, even though there may be some aversion or resistance, or it's not what I want this instead, to the degree that I can stay relaxed and open to whatever the experience is, working with that is the practice for me, essentially.
Beautiful. That was a great description of practice, right? Yeah, beautiful. That is practicing, trying to be with things the way they are. Seeing clearly, you know, not wanting them different, or if I want them different, knowing I'm noticing. Beautiful. Anybody want to add to that? Great.
It's
Say your name, would you?
Hi, I'm Afsha. I guess for me, when I started meditating, it was about, you know, feeling better. But now I'm realizing it's about like being with the discomfort and allowing the discomfort and making space for the discomfort. And yeah, that's my practice lately.
Yeah. 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 That's, and what is that doing for you? Like, I mean, I think you're saying what many people say. They come to try and feel better, and then what they start to realize is, oh, you know, we don't just feel better. We have to learn how to be with, you know, the suffering, the dukkha, you know, the discomfort. But what is it giving you that you're learning how to do that? Do you know?
I guess just, you know, being alive and present to life, and life is going to be, you know, a lot of pleasant things and as well as a lot of discomfortable things, and just, you know, having that acceptance of life as it is.
Yes. Living life. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to add or ask a question about this idea of practice? What is practice? Like, you know, did you, when in your meditation, how did you practice tonight? Russell, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, so for me, I would say that, like, when I'm going through, like, my day-to-day life, I get very, like, jumbled, very, like, don't fully know how to describe it, but, like, basically practice for me is an opportunity to kind of tune away from, like, the distractions of the outside world, to kind of bring myself to the present moment, of course, but, like, I don't fully know how to describe what I'm trying to get at.
That's great. It's wonderful what you're saying is saying, you know, finding the words, take your time to feel into this. What is practice? Feel into it. Feel that you don't know exactly. That's great. You know, because we're, yeah, and we've got another comment over here. Just, we're, you know, sometimes it really isn't very clear.
Thank you. I guess the words that come up for me with practice are habit and centeredness and normalcy, so that what I'm doing with my practice is making it habitual, making it a habit to bring myself to a centered place and have that be the core of what is normal. That is the place that I want to go to. Mm-hmm. So that everything that takes me out of that, mm-hmm, I keep reorienting toward the habit of coming back to being centered, mm-hmm, making mm-hmm that normal.
Yeah. So you bring in some other really important elements, which are routine or ritual, like our practices. So Russell, you're mentioning daily life, right? Kind of tracking what's happening in daily life, and you're kind of talking about, in my mind, formal meditation. And so you've probably heard this many times, but the idea that sitting down for a formal period of meditation where you set a timer and, you know, you kind of decide, okay, I'm going to pay attention right now for this period. I'm not going to get up and go clean the refrigerator. I'm going to stay here and just try and be with whatever comes up and try and do it with as much presence and clarity as I can, right? And that's sort of like going to the gym, We go to the gym and we work on lifting weights or riding the bike, but we're trying to work on conditioning. We're trying to build strength. And then we take that strength and we carry it with us everywhere. Everywhere we go, we use those muscles, opening the jars of food and climbing stairs and, you know, going on our walks. So the idea is formal practice is a little bit more intensive and maybe a little easier to help us notice when we're lost. Right? Because there's not as many distractions and things to keep you going. You know, oh, even if it's only twice during a whole half hour sit that you recognize, oh, I'm lost in thought. Oh, I'm lost. That's probably, you know, 200 times more than you would have if you were just going about your life, right? Doing things. So this is an important part of practice, which is formal practice, and then there's daily life practice. It's all practice. And there's some of us are really inclined more toward daily life practice, too. And there's a whole lot of wonderful practice and depth of practice that comes from that, too. So a couple more things that I want to say. Just, you know, I said I have this list, effort. It takes effort to do practice. We have to put energy into it. Equipment, if we, you know, need a chair or cushions, you know, we have to set ourselves up however it is we need. So we have to think about, what does my body need? What do I need to succeed in my practice? You know? There's also the routines, you know, like, okay, usually it's very helpful to have a set time when we meditate. You know, it's great to add more, but usually, like, it's either start of the day or end of day, you know, or, I don't know, maybe some people have very disciplined coming in the middle of the day. But it is very helpful to get into a routine for the formal practice. It can be helpful to create rituals around it. Like, how do you take care of yourself before you go to sit? Making sure you've gone to the bathroom, you know, making sure you have the right blanket. That's a ritual, right? There's ways that we bring ourselves, help ourselves attune and tone, you know, prepare for coming to sit. There's having inspiration or faith or confidence, you know. This helps us with our practice. So there's so much to it, and we'll explore this more, but mostly practice means trying, applying. It means not knowing. We don't sit down with some sense of we know what's going to happen. We sit down not knowing what's going to happen and being attentive to what actually does happen and then what our relationship is to what's happening. And trying to apply just some of the simple things like, oh, greed, hatred, delusion operating. Uh-oh. You know, I said, can I feel the breath? Can I feel my body? You know, just over and over again. Oh, thinking, all right, lost in thought, okay. Oh, and now that I'm not, what does this feel like? Right here, just right here. And I guess I'll say one other thing, which is that ideally we don't think of anything as a mistake in our practice. Everything belongs. There's something to learn from everything that comes up, everything we do, every experience. So it's not so helpful to be judging bad practice, bad meditator. You know, more open up in this way of like, oh, what's happening here? What can I be aware of right here? Oh, I'm being critical of myself, right? Instead of just going with this criticism, oh, wait, this is aversion, right? This is a form of hatred. Then the last piece that I wanted to share about is a very important friend to make in our practice. And this friend has a name. The name in Pali is dukkha. Dukkha is often translated as the word suffering. But when you look at the translations, there's different ways to translate it, not just suffering. One is pain, which I like. You know, what is it called? A hangnail can be painful, right? A little bit painful, or a lot painful, but, you know, and maybe a shoe being a little too tight might start to feel painful, right? You know, just subtle degrees of pain, discomfort to extreme, you know, real pain. So this whole range, dukkha, means this whole range, huge range. Anywhere there's tension, there's likely some dukkha. Right? There's another translation that I like because it really gets to the attitude behind it, which is all about dukkha, which is bummer. Anything you would say, oh, this is a bummer. Right? And and why would I call dukkha, why would I call suffering, why would I call pain a friend? Something very important to pay attention to in your practice. What the heck would I mean? Anybody have any idea?
It's going to sharpen your practice.
Okay, where's that mic? Because we need that to be heard.
That is what is going to sharpen your practice. If it's easy, you're not necessarily learning as much, right?
So, yeah, I mean, it's going to sharpen your practice. If it's easy, you're not going to... I mean, a lot of people say they don't learn from their successes, they learn from their failures. Yeah. What else? Why else would we want dukkha to be our friend? Why do we want to... Yes, great. Can you grab it?
I guess there's a message beneath the pain.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Do you have any sense of how you would describe that or what you would say about that?
Yeah, I mean, a pain is usually because we are either like averting something or we're trying to like hold on to something.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're talking about like essentially what they say. So the first noble truth is that there is dukkha, there is suffering. This is the very first truth that the Buddha taught, noble truth. The second noble truth is it's interpreted two ways. There's the arising of dukkha, and then there's the cause of dukkha. And essentially, if it's the cause, it's clinging. Wanting something different than what we have, not wanting what we have, right? There's just this way that we are, or we're clinging to a view, an idea, an opinion, you know. We're holding on to something in a fixed way. And it leads to tension and stress and pain. And another way to kind of emphasize this idea of why we want to think about it as a friend is, let's think about physical pain. Why do you want to notice if you are physically in pain? Great. Russell, can you grab the mic?
Sure. I could imagine, say, putting your hand on a stove.
Yep. And then what happens?
It hurts.
And it hurts. And if you don't pay attention, what happens?
You get burned.
You get burned even more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yep, go ahead. You got a question? You get the mic, though, please. Oh, you got one right there.
I'm not sure quite how to phrase this, but what you mentioned earlier just a moment ago. The rising of pain.
Yeah.
And so the lessening of pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had a pain, all of us have had a pain physically, when it lessens, there's that the feeling of great relief. And it seems to me that you wouldn't have the experience of that if you didn't also have the rising of pain.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I think that it's true that it's very helpful to notice when suffering isn't there, right? Because that's the third noble truth, which is the end of suffering, right? So, and I'll just say there's a condition, a medical condition, where people have no physical pain. It's a complex, genetic condition. And actually, you'd think, maybe you're not thinking that way right now, but you might think, oh, that would be so nice not to have pain. But it's actually horrible to not have pain. And I even know a doctor who works with people who have no pain, and it's really hard for the doctor to work with a person with no pain because they're not getting any information. There's no guidance for working with the body. And people often end up really getting seriously hurt a lot in their lives when they have no pain. And for me, that's really important. The body has, there's a point, a purpose for having pain when we're hurt, which is for us to notice and to stop doing what it is that we're doing that's causing us pain. And then to take care of the wound. And so for me, the same thing is true about dukkha. That, the dukkha is really just the, to me, in this way of relating to it, it is the message that we're doing something that's causing harm to ourselves. And if we want to know that so we can stop hurting ourselves, it becomes our friend. It's almost like shooting the messenger when we get upset that we have dukkha. Right? It's just the messenger. So these are the three things that I wanted to really start. Like, for me, this is about establishing a practice. It's about mindfulness. It's about a practice. And it's about paying attention to dukkha. Any questions about any of those three things or any additions or comments before we move into breakout groups? Anne, right there.
This may be semantics, but my understanding had been that, physical pain is just physical pain, and dukkha is our reaction to the physical pain. So that dukkha is a different category than physical pain.
So, yeah, you might think about it as psychological pain.
Yeah. That's how I've thought of it.
But you're also bringing in something different, another teaching, which is an important teaching, which I can kind of just briefly elaborate on, which is the psychological suffering that we're talking about. It's not that we're not supposed to feel grief or sad or... And, it's not that we're not supposed to have a response to life. Things happen. It's that we don't want to make it worse. Dukkha, the psychological pain that the Buddha's really talking about, is the things that make it worse. And there's a simile about, kind of, they use this idea of a second arrow. That somebody gets hit with an arrow and it hurts. And that the dukkha is, in this particular simile, the person who got hit with the arrow apparently doesn't want them to remove the arrow unless they know exactly which person shot it, what poison was on it, blah, 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 blah. In the meantime, they've got this arrow. And then the idea is that we're shooting more arrows into ourselves. Another way to talk about this would be to say, if I get a cold, that I can then start to think, what's wrong with my immune system? I must not have been taking enough care of myself. Uh-oh, I think this is pneumonia. No, it's COVID. No, I'm never going to get better. I know this is going to last for 6 months. I'm not going to be able to do that commitment I have. You know, this is what, you know, I'm weak. We start to add. This is all extra. All extra. So this idea of don't make it worse. Don't make it worse. Is that clarifying, Anne?
Yeah, that's how I think of it, yeah.
Thank you for your comment. Okay.
And so, I do that a lot.
You do that a lot. All that added suffering, all the extra. So, you know, this is why I think it's important to orient toward the dukkha, to start to see it as a friend, a messenger. It's delivering a message. Don't get mad at the messenger. It's not, the dukkha itself is not what's causing the problem. It's a symptom, is how I think about it. Yeah. All right. So we're going to get into small groups. So the first question I would like you to do is to just go around in a circle. And for about a minute or so per person, just describe how you know when you're being mindful. How do you know when you're being mindful? So about a minute, you know, approximately. So whatever that means, I don't know. I can ring a bell after 2 minutes and know that I'll give you more than 2 minutes to finish. How's that sound? Great. 1 minute each person. So I'm going to ring a bell at 2 minutes, which would be at the halfway point. You may or be beyond it or not quite there. It'll just help you kind of move along. Okay, so the last question, same format, is what helps you feel like your practice has deepened? What helps you feel like your practice has deepened? So same thing. I'll ring a 2 minute bell halfway through. How was it to describe how you know when you're mindful, or to hear people describe that? How was that for you? What came up for you?
I muted. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Yeah. It felt really good hearing everyone, like, when they felt they're mindful, because it felt to me like that's everyone's optimal self. It's like when they're at, I don't want to say their best, but it's like when they can reach their full potential and find the most clarity about who they really are.
That's beautiful.
And what they want to do. And there's just so little. We're in that zone, I feel. It's a pity we're in that zone so little. But nevertheless, it reveals so much about us.
And every moment of it is very meaningful.
Yes, even if it's only a few seconds.
That's right. That's great. Anyone want to add anything to that? Great. There's a mic right here.
I think what I love about these discussions, and just to add to what was said a little bit, is it feels like you're meandering down a path that you didn't plan to. So let's say we started with Catherine saying something, and I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. But by the time it was my turn to talk, I had discovered so many things and come to so many conclusions about my practice. And
that's beautiful.
So yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, you guys, really, it's such a gift you're giving each other. such a gift. We find each other in these ways, right? We find ourselves, we find our practice. Beautiful, beautiful. What about, how was it to hear other people describe their practice? Anything come up there? Or about deepening practice? What does it feel like, you know, how do you know? What does it feel like when your practice has deepened? Did anything come up there? Anyone's willing to share? Great.
I think one thing that came up for us pretty briefly, but this idea of like we noticed that we're better able or willing to let go of things, the letting go. So I had this metaphor that I'm working on with water, but like noticing waves and then letting them crash, letting the waves crash, which we don't always do, or we try not to let them.
Yes, yeah, and it's impossible to stop them, right, at the same time. Yeah, nice. Great. Well, I'll offer an invitation to a couple of things that may support you in deepening your practice, maybe. One is I'm doing a half day this Saturday, so where you come at 9:30, 9:20, 9:30, and we do 45-minute sit, 45-minute walk, 45-minute sit, short dharmet, and then we clean the sangha and have lunch together, if you wish, or tea. Yeah, so it's very sweet. So you're all welcome to that. And the other is that Diana Clark and I are teaching a weekend non-residential retreat, specifically for people who are new to retreat practice. So if you have been feeling like, oh, I'm interested in going on a retreat, but I'm a little nervous, I'm not really sure what to expect, or it feels like too big of a leap, this is perfect for you. It's designed to help you have some exposure to what retreat practice is like, but you go home to your bed. And, you know, it starts Friday at 3 p.m. on May 31st. It's all day Saturday from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. and then Sunday from 9 a.m. to noon. So you still have your Sunday afternoon, you still have your bed, but we'll be doing, you know, we'll be incorporating going for refuge and taking the precepts, these things that are rituals on a retreat. We'll have yogi jobs. We'll provide supper two nights, so you get to have a retreat-type supper. We'll do practice discussions. We'll really give you a supported exposure to prolonged meditation and what retreat practice is like. So you can scan this QR code to get to the registration link or take a photo of the flyer. So, in support of your deepening your practice, right? So, thank you. We're at 8 o'clock. Yeah. It was lively, wasn't it? It was lively. This was nice. It was really sweet. Yeah. A lot of laughter, which was fun. Yeah. So, may you carry this lightness, this support, this laughter, this kind of meandering and on this path and discovering these things. May you carry it with you as you leave tonight. And that sense of like discovery and joy and companionship, may you bring that with you into your life. And may it support you so that you are more mindful and that other people get to experience your mindfulness, and then maybe that gets carried forward so that more and more people are met with mindfulness, with this kind attention. May our practice spread wide and far and benefit all beings everywhere. Thank you.